Good afternoon. Well, here we are at the end of the conference. I've enjoyed the conference. I think we all can be commended for hanging in there until the very end. No one has an airplane to catch. So in this last session, I'm going to describe a case that's absurd, but it's startling, but it's not funny. And it shows what happens when testing professionals are not allowed to do their jobs. Let's see here. Okay. So the sessions will be in the IPAC library, but I've also put it out on my website. Okay. A few quick takeaways. So we are so close to the testing that what's absolutely clear to us is not absolutely clear to other people, even to very bright and very well-intentioned people. And fortunately, the courts sometimes can be defenders of civil service law. I think we'll see this afternoon that some managers trust their gut just too much, and that some even excellent merit systems are in peril. So, let me give you a little background to this session. One slide on my sister's accounting firm. My sister is the bright one in the family. She hires accountants occasionally, and she described to me once how she evaluates the job applicants. She says, very proudly, I give them a problem that arose that day or that week, and I see how they handle it. And my response was, did you ever think of giving all the applicants the same problem? And no, she had never thought of that. So I didn't get into standardized scoring with my sister, but the implications were obvious. But in any case, it was not something that ever dawned on her. All right, so what we have as a subject matter for this afternoon is a court case I was involved with a year or so ago. It involved an examination for promotion to state police sergeant in Connecticut. The Connecticut Civil Service is administered by DAS, the Department of Administrative Services, and I'll use that abbreviation on some of the slides. And DAS provides eligible lists to agencies, and the state sergeant exam is a promotional exam. Now, it turned out the exam was a two-phase process. DAS conducted what they called an exam, and then the Connecticut State Police conducted its own assessment process, and I'll use CSP for Connecticut State Police. And both phases were curious. Now, I had a little difficulty in putting together this talk because there is a court protective order, and it protects the questions, the grading system, the grades, and I had to scratch my head. What is left for me to talk about? So I thought perhaps the testimony I gave in open court would not be covered by the protective order, but I'm not an attorney and I'm not sure that's true. But the published court decision, which is on the web, is definitely a fair game. So I solved the dilemma of what can I talk about by limiting myself to things that are in the published court decision. For those of you who may not know, all federal cases and many state cases are on the web, going back many years in the case of the federal system. The federal website is called pacer.gov, and there's a nominal charge to download pages from pacer.com, but they give you a free amount of pages every month, and it's a rare month where I go over the free allotment. In the case of the Connecticut court URL that I gave you at the top of this slide. There's no charge for downloading. The many exhibits that I submitted were not included on the Connecticut website. Often the federal website does include reports and exhibits. So in this case, a lot of the juicier material is protected, like the weight that's given for licensure as a cosmetologist in the exam for promotion to state police sergeant. And the case of the Connecticut State Police is of particular interest to IPAC members because it involves the Connecticut Civil Service Test Development Team, and I'll talk more about that at the end of the presentation. Okay, phase one was a DAS exam, and DAS issued an announcement on the 24th of September of 2019 saying that the examination for sergeant would consist of a multiple choice job knowledge exam, and it wasn't on the announcement, but that was an exam developed by the Cooperative Personnel Services, folks who have been active in IPAC for many years. It would include two rounds of written questions, a resume evaluation, and an oral interview. So far, so good. Doesn't sound so absurd. On the 2nd of October, DAS issued a revised exam notice. The multiple choice test was gone. The exam would be only pass-fail, and it would be based on the number of years in the lower rank. You had to meet the minimum entrance requirement. You had to possess a driver's license, and you had to say that you were willing to work full-time and willing to work any shift, and that would be the examination. So, little recap. The state hired a consulting firm. The consulting firm worked for a good number of months, developed a multiple choice exam. They surveyed a goodly number of incumbent sergeants. DAS announced the exam with the multiple choice test. 9 days later, they announced there would be no multiple choice test. There'd be no replacement, no similar measure of job knowledge. So, why did they abandon the multiple choice test? Well, at the time, it seemed like they had no staff to administer it. The online testing had no security provisions. It would take some calendar time. Connecticut was abandoning all its assembled exams. And as a result, there was a certified sergeant list with 297 names, all with the same score. So let's take a look at the phase two. The Connecticut State Police was going to administer two rounds of referral questions. We don't know what those are yet. Those would be pass-fail. Would evaluate education experience and would rank people based on an oral exam. So it seems to me, since these things were on the original announcement that was issued by DAS, that maybe they were first considered part of the DAS exam, and at some point broke off, and that phase two was considered part of a separate state police process. But let's look at referral questions one. So there were six areas: education, military experience, years with the Connecticut State Police, whether there were any assignments to a specialty unit, experience in non-Connecticut State Police law enforcement, and possession of any professional license. And all of those were scored with some number of points. For example, there was a maximum number of points of 15 for education. And the whole process was scored on a pass-fail basis. The people who passed went on to referral questions two. And there were three questions. And the three questions were: describe your experience in administrative areas, in investigative areas, and in specialized training skills. And there was a 5-point maximum for each area. And the Phase two referral questions were evaluated by a panel of three, the colonel and two lieutenant colonels. It was scored on a pass-fail basis based on the number of points. 9 points were needed to pass. Some people got a score of 8. All the people who got a score of 8 had their scores reviewed, and some of those scores went up on review. Now, what did the judge think of that? Referral question 2. Well, the judge said there was no record of which 8-point candidates were reviewed, because some of the 8-point candidates had their scores go up, so some of the 9-point candidates could have been 8-point candidates, but the documentation was not maintained, so there was no record of who was reviewed. There was also no record of why some scores were raised. Reviews were not done blind, and there were no individual ratings, just consensus. So the judge was not impressed with that. Then there was a resume evaluation called a personal profile, and the panel rated the resumes. The judge opined on that as well, and the judge said that the criteria for reviewing the resume were not described in writing. The criteria seemed to be left to the rater's discretion, and some of the information from the resume was included in the documentation of the reasons that some people were selected, but there was no standard that spelled out what would be what types of information would be included as a reason for selection. Okay, but all this was pass-fail. Now we go on to the oral exam. We have a ranking of candidates based on the oral exam. There were 3 situational questions. There was a 2-minute time limit for each question, so this was 6 minutes in all. The exam was administered and scored by the colonel and 2 lieutenant colonels. And the attorney that hired me asked me about that 2-minute time limit. And I think he wanted to go to town on that and say that that was completely unrealistic and wanted to beat up the state police for that. But I didn't fault the process for the 2-minute time limit, because in real life, police have to act in real time. They're not accountants who can sit at their desk and pore over a topic and pull a book off the shelf and read the tax law. They have to decide on the spot. And so I did not complain about the 2-minute time limit. The judge did look at the oral exam carefully, probably because that was the basis of the ranking. So, some of the observations of the judge, and the judge was a very attentive audience when I was giving my oral testimony. He took notes, and what was in the final decision was there were no numeric scores. There were no points assigned. There was no written scoring. There were no predetermined correct answers, no standards, no values, using his words. The notes that the raters took were not preserved, and the interviews were spread over 5 days. The same questions were used on all 5 days. The judge observed that the original rating categories were 3, but the high end was dichotomized into high and low high. And without documentation. The judge observed that the original ratings were not preserved, but the rater comments were recorded by an admin person who sat in on the deliberations of the panel. And the documentation was maintained in a computer file. The computer file had the name, the race, the gender, the recommendation, high, low, high, whatever, and the comments that were dictated by the raters. So we had some documentation for the reasons. 27 people were rated very highly recommended, and there were 27 job openings. The judge thought that amount of agreement, 27 and 27, was curious. The evaluation areas per the testimony were that the candidate presented properly, had a good appearance, was calm and professional in demeanor, and spoke with a reasonable tone of voice. There was no systematic evaluation of the content of the answers. There was no checklist for the content. The raters did sometimes comment on content, but it seemed from the comments that were preserved for the ratings that often the manner of response was more important than the content. So we have for each applicant narrative comments. The comments were dictated by the raters at the time of the oral exam. So the judge looked at those reasons and he observed that there were actually two versions of the documentation of the ratings. And those two versions were dated 2 weeks apart. The initial ratings were all the comments dictated by the raters. But those comments dictated by the raters were given to the EEO department, and the EEO staff reviewed the ratings. And after the EEO review, a new set of documentation was produced. And some of the comments that were inconsistent with the rankings were removed. And some comments were added to support rankings of seemingly similar candidates. So, for example, in one case, there was a reference to some misinformation being provided. That was changed to inclusive content and rationale and logical approach to all scenarios. And that was for a candidate that was slated to be promoted. There were two other candidates who were slated to be promoted who had negative comments in the first set of documentation, and those comments disappeared as of the time of the second set of documentation. So the court had an interest in what the state police thought of all this, and the judge quoted the colonel as saying that the ranking was important to him and he did not pay much attention to the documentation. So, how did the court decide? The court decided that providing a list of 297 tied candidates does not satisfy civil service law, which requires, the phrase is, to identify those applicants most qualified. And the state court also held that the screening process conducted by the state police was a civil service exam, even though it was not held by DAS. The court was very clear that the state police process did not satisfy the law. The law calls for a test or an examination that must employ an objective standard or measure. The court said that a competitive means a process that's objective enough that it can be challenged or reviewed. And so the court finally ordered that the Connecticut State Police use an objective competitive exam for promotions. Now, the Connecticut State Police did have some defenses, and one defense was that it was just impractical to hold a better, longer exam, to hold the multiple choice exam, to find a place to administer it, to grade it. Said the overtime budget for sergeants was breaking the state police budget. And the court was not impressed by that, and the court said that the civil service law is more important than the budgetary constraints of the agency. Now, I was a little frustrated in preparing this presentation because some of the really juicy things that I testified to in court and included in my exhibits I thought were perhaps covered by that protective order, and so I couldn't talk about them today, but I think you see the big picture. So a few takeaways. Merit principles are at risk. They are not intuitively obvious. People don't just follow them because it's obvious you should do that. Two, the appreciation for merit system principles is sometimes low. Managers often trust their gut more than a structured process. Shane Pittman said exactly that in the in a previous presentation. In this case, the state police managers knew some of the candidates, and they trusted their experience with their subordinates more than the civil service process that they were implementing. Also, the managers have goals that might differ from merit system goals. They might have affirmative action goals. Recall that the file with the list of recommendations included the name and the gender and the ethnic group. So there is danger in allowing agencies free rein to design and conduct promotional processes. Now, I think most managers have never heard of the Uniform Guidelines on Employee Selection Procedures. They've never heard of the SIOP principles. They've never heard of the joint standards. They've never heard of the merit federal merit system principles. They've never heard of the guidelines on assessment center operations, and the information in those standards and principles and guidelines are not obvious and will not be followed by people who have not been trained. So I think that this is a sad demise of the Connecticut civil service examining system. Connecticut was once a jewel of civil service examining. Bruce Davey, who was a past president of IPMAC, the predecessor organization of IPAC, was a brilliant examiner. He built a superlative examining program. And now it appears that Connecticut has abandoned all civil service examining. All people who meet minimum entrance requirements are certified. And just today, I did another search on the web to see if I could find an actual assembled exam for Connecticut on the DAS website, and I could not. Maybe there are some things that could be said in favor of the DAS plan. So, with the DAS plan, there'll be no exam backlog. There'll be no provisional appointments. All of the grading will be based on interviews, which typically have no adverse impact, so there'll be no adverse impact. DAS will save the salaries of their exam development staff, their exam administration staff, their all the costs in grading exams and in fielding appeals, all the other administrative functions. So I could see why Connecticut wants to do this and is still doing it. But it definitely flies in the face of the federal merit system standards and the state law. At this late moment in the conference, let me express my thanks to IPAC, which has provided professional support to me for, I counted it a few minutes before this presentation, over 40 years. People in IPAC have been a source of valuable information. Colleagues have been extremely generous in providing their time and giving me samples of work they've done that help me with work that I'm doing. So I have a great debt to IPAC, and I'm pleased to be part of the organization. Okay. Anyone who would like to chat about this topic or other assessment topics, feel free to contact me at any time. I'd be happy to chat. And if anybody has any questions or comments, you could ask, but I probably can't answer any questions for reasons I mentioned.